Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 20th of May, recording at 9:49 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, what about the highlights here today? It was more of the same here in spades. The Asian stock markets were mostly weaker. Not dramatically so. But the European stock markets were somewhat weaker than what we saw in Asia. They started off really with modest gains for the most part, but then reversed those and closed. For instance, DAX closed down 2%. Now, in the Americas, Wall Street really was down, I believe, all day, and it closed pretty much on the lows. We're down, for instance, 3.9% on the S&P 500 index, 4.11% on the NASDAQ composite. So this is a big hit. And Brazil extended its break beneath the 60,000 level that we've often mentioned in the charts, down 2.51%. And so you get the picture here, pretty much all red. Well, as I look at this screen, entirely red on the Bloomberg indices shown. Now, that led to more of the so-called flight to quality and caused bond prices to be really quite strong. The U.S. 30-year long bond future up almost 2 points. And the dollar was generally firm, but as we've seen before, and this it was the yen that was strongest. The dollar has fell down to below 89 yen to the dollar, and it's currently 89.67. The euro's bounce back continued. And that's up against the U.S. dollar to 124.94. Sterling still a bit soft. The Swiss franc has been awfully strong recently, particularly against the euro. But that's begun to shift in the last couple of days. But let me stick to the highlights here. Precious metals succumbed to the selling pressure. Palladium and platinum were hit very hard, down, palladium is down, I think, nearly $44, platinum down $90 to $15.15. Gold held up well by comparison, but still closed. It sort of flirted with the break-even level for much of the day, but ended down at 12 at 1181. Crude oil had also been weak. I'm just looking for that. It's currently, it's not down on that. Well, it's currently 69.76. It had been nearly a dollar lower. Soybeans and corn a little bit firmer, and some other soft commodities a wee bit firmer. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, stock markets really have more than a whiff of fear about them, and we are getting a bout of deflationary fears as part of that. Now, I've talked pretty well daily about that triple waterfall of events, and we can actually call it a quadruple waterfall of events if we take China's draining of liquidity from the system to curb property speculation. Then we had the indictment of Goldman Sachs and by the SEC, that has prompted fears of who's next among the investment banks. Then, of course, we had the sovereign debt crisis in Euroland and the very, very weak euro, and that prompted cries of who's next in terms of sovereign debt problems. And then we had the May 6th meltdown in the stock market when the Dow fell 1,000 points in the better part of 10 minutes before regaining much of that. But markets are obviously very nervous in here, and this flight to cash or what people regard as quality in the form of treasuries continues in here right now. So, what do we make of it? Well, it's doing a lot of technical damage, and that's been the case. That was the case a week ago. So it's something I've been saying every day, because it's taking out a lot of these 200-day moving averages, which I have regarded as the approximate trend mean for the cyclical bull that we had seen. Now, for most markets, most stock markets, that cyclical bull is well and truly capped, but not all of them. For instance, it's quite interesting. There has been very little selling pressure in the mainly agricultural suppliers, although they also have growing manufacturing industries. But I'm talking about Asia's countries such as the Philippines, Thailand, although Thailand was closed today, but it had been up yesterday. Certainly Indonesia, Malaysia, and so these countries that supply many of the products that China needs and are also tourist destinations for the more wealthy Chinese citizens. And as I say, they have held up extremely well. It just looks like a quiet ranging consolidation. Now, I have no doubt that they'll get hit tomorrow. On Friday with some selling pressure because of the size of the Wall Street decline. But it's a very mixed picture. You know, you've got Greece down near its March 2009 lows, and rightly so. Greece and some of these other European countries with the worst of the sovereign debt problems are certainly going to be back in recession. And they are going to be facing a very deflationary environment overall. But that's not the world, fortunately. But what I think we can say, looking at this stock market action, and as I say, I cited four major reasons why investors are anxious. Some of those reasons popped up very quickly, like the Goldman Sachs indictment and like that May 6th meltdown and the speed with which the sovereign debt yields soared alarmed a lot of people. Now, I said at the time there was a lot of fun and games in there, to put it very, very kindly, involving hedge funds shorting those when the officials in Euroland were completely caught by surprise and at six and sevens, and it took them quite a while to get their act together. But they did get the act together, but nevertheless, the problem still remains, and psychologically, it's understandable that investors are very fearful. Now, the important thing, I think, for all of us to remember is that when markets go down, particularly if they go down rapidly, just as we're seeing now, that people become very emotional. Sentiment deteriorates very rapidly, and that leads to all kinds of extrapolation, wild forecasts. Well, these things usually burn themselves out fairly quickly in here, but is this 2008 all over again? I don't think so for a minute, and time will tell, obviously. But back then, people were forecasting a depression, or a lot of people were expecting a depression, and that proved to be quite wrong. Well, maybe in Greece and some of these other countries, it will feel for some of those people, like a depression, if they get a 10 or 20% cut in their public sector no fire job position, or a 20% cut in their lifelong generous pension contribution. But let's keep things in perspective here. I think what investors, that's what I'm trying to do. My message here, really, for investors is that instead of joining the hysteria, just as we don't want to join in the euphoria when markets are running on the upside, although it's very easy to do, we get swept up in the emotions. But use it analytically. Use it analytically as a contrary indicator. When markets went up for 10 weeks in a row after their February reaction lows, that led to an overextension relative to MAs, as discussed, and it also led to some quite euphoric reactions. The weekly view that I post from Riverfront highlighted that on several occasions in their letters. Now, what's happening in this decline is that we're getting moving towards oversold levels. The decline is fast enough and steep enough so that it has done a lot of technical damage. So really, for most of these stock market indices, it does look as if a medium-term top is or medium-term peaks have been formed by these markets, but I don't expect any of the reasonably healthy stock markets, or even that many of the not so healthy economies, and I would put most of the OECD countries in that category. But are we going to see the S&P test its March low? Are we going to see the UK FTSE index test its March low? Or Australia? I don't think so. But I wouldn't be surprised if that's what people start to forecast if we get a bit more selling, such as we've seen here today. And we probably will get that. I think tomorrow will certainly start out badly, at least. So my point is, though, that analytically we want to use that growing fear. We want to recognize, rather, that growing fear is a contrary indicator. And one of my messages persistently stated was, if we're going to sell, if you want to sell, thinking about selling, the time to do it is always when we have markets that are surging ahead, becoming overextended relative to their MAs. I mentioned that repeatedly as that situation was developing. It's a choice. One can hold on because you hope that markets are going to go higher still, or that they will just get normal corrections and not move into bear market territory. But if we get caught in something like this very sharp selling squall, personally, I think it's a mistake to capitulate and to come out of unleveraged investment positions that have very promising medium to longer term futures. So I've said on a number of occasions that, having lamented the fact that markets offered so few bargains back in early April, when, for those who live in the UK, the ISA, new round of ISA money became available, where one could top up ISA accounts. I'm not buying yet, but I'm now feeling, as I've said before, that I'm spoiled for choice in terms of opportunities. Now, the overall setback has made some opportunities look better than others. Japan, which was one of the laggards as we were approaching April, though then it had a sort of a bit of a catch-up move, is less interesting to me today. I have a couple of small trading positions in Japan, and I have a a small investment in my personal long-term investment positions in Japan, really via a very early pension policy. But I'm no longer thinking of topping that up because my first play was always to say that it was to trade the yen as a short candidate. Now that's cost me some money because the yen's been quite strong in here. But I bought a little more of the dollar against the yen today, and in two transactions traded one of them out at a reasonable profit on my baby steps trading system. But the point I'm making here is that the weak yen, the whole bullish view at Fuller Money on Japan was predicated on the basis that Japan wanted and needed a weaker yen. Well, the government's been pretty ineffectual in engineering that weak currency so far. So that puts Japan on hold as far as I'm concerned, whereas the weakness that we're seeing is rapidly creating more interesting opportunities elsewhere in other Fuller Money themes. For me, it won't be golds, but it might well be some of the miners and some of the Asian funds generally, or perhaps Brazil if it comes back far enough. So I'm getting interested. I'm in no hurry. I don't feel I need to rush in when we have markets that are this week frightening investors away, but the next reasonably significant thing that I do in stock markets will be to add to my long-term investment positions. Now, meanwhile, I am running a hedge short in the DAX and also in the S&P. I had opened those up pretty near the tops for those indices. Actually, they went for a week or so. They went higher than where I shorted them before then falling very, very dramatically. I came out for a while, came back in, as you may recall. But so I'm playing the downside here as well. But what interests me most is the buying opportunity that that will develop here. But let's let the dust settle first. I don't see any signs yet that the sell-off has been completed, and we know what to look for. We won't see it lose downward momentum. Go quiet for a while. I think that what we have to be careful of is if we get a sudden oversold rally, that's quite sharp. Those are usually retraced, just as we had the rebound the day after Wall Street's big meltdown day, but it hasn't been able to hold it. Okay, what else is of interest here? The gold. Well, I say one more thing in terms of that background. I may have said this earlier on, but the action that we are seeing does suggest to me that global growth will ease somewhat. We know that's going to happen in Euroland, and that is the world's biggest economy when you add all those countries' economies up in terms of their contribution to GDP, global GDP. So that's certainly going to be a slower growth area, although some companies will do quite well because of the weakness of the euro, which will give them a export edge. The U.S., a lot of people are looking at or until today, when the S&P broke its 200-day moving average, as did the other indices. Didn't break it all that dramatically, but it has broken it, broken those 200-day moving averages. But a lot of people have been regarding, the U.S. dollar, and Wall Street as a bastion of safety. That would be nice, but it's not quite the shining city on the hill that Ronald Reagan used to talk about. And I would also add that this dollar strength is not going to help the U.S. economy over the medium term. It's going to make it a little less competitive, particularly against Europe. All right, what else? Your precious metals. Now, I think I said in last night's audio that the chances of gold getting that additional spike upwards in the short term before going into another one of its sort of medium-term corrective phases, the chances of that additional run to the upside to the $1,300 area were waning. And the odds deteriorated further here today because palladium, which was really the big leader, and veteran subscribers will recall, and I mentioned for the analytical interest of the newer subscribers, that we've had a number of medium-term cyclical uplegs within this a secular bull market for gold, and the leaders of the three, I mean, the leadership's been shared, silver led once, then platinum, and palladium has led this one. And while palladium had soared way above its 200-day MA, you can see that on the charts, and we've commented on that, and then it's plunged right back to the MA. Now, none of the precious metals have broken their rising MAs as of this stage, but when I look at the palladium chart, and do have a look at it, I'm posting it today, it's very clear to me that this is a classic type 1 ending, as taught at the chart seminar, and the best I can see on the upside for palladium over the short to medium term is some right-hand extension top formation development. So the leader has peaked. They usually peak a little bit before the others. Platinum also has done a lot of technical damage, breaking the progression of rising lows. Silver, well, it just looks choppy, and it has held up better, including today, although it was down nearly half a dollar, bringing it back to 1764. Gold has held up best, but is still very much within, well above its rising 200-day moving average. But unless we get a big rally tomorrow, we will have a downward dynamic this week for gold. That's hardly the end of the world. Combine all these factors, and I think that I would lower my expectations as far as what gold does over the short term. Now, is it still a safe haven for long-term investors? You bet it is. I'm talking about, I'm not inclined to add any more leveraged futures trades. Why is it still a very safe haven for long-term investors? Well, because if we take the economic situation generally, I'm going to have a quick sip of water. This is a long audio, but these are unusual conditions, and maybe the coverage, extra coverage is justified. But if we take the economic situation, I think market action, sharp fall in commodities, stock markets, is suggesting to us that global growth is going to slow somewhat. That's not guaranteed, but it's probably quite a realistic probability. The sovereign debt crisis has signaled to central banks that they really do need to tackle this problem, just as George Osborne, the new UK Chancellor of the Exchequer, is doing in the budget that he's preparing. They really do need to achieve some sort of fiscal discipline before markets put them in crisis mode, and they're not in crisis mode right now, so they've got a window of opportunity to start reining in that government debt. Now, that is not going to be boosting growth, certainly not initially, because it'll probably push unemployment up a little further. But overall, I think a background of slower growth will be met with more quantitative easing, and that brings us back to the gold story. So it will be undermining the credibility of these currencies even further in terms of their long-term purchasing power. And we know how much central banks and governments actually fear deflation and wish to resist it. Well, how are they going to do that? They can't chop interest rates because they've already done that. It's going to be more quantitative easing. So again, that does bring us back to the gold story. So I expect that gold could easily weaken further here. I think it probably will, but it'll probably fall less than just about anything else. And I also think that gold will be quick to move back to the upside when the dust does settle, just as we saw after its sell-off in 2008, which was less than just about every other commodity, precious metal, and all the stock market indices. So I expect similar action there. Therefore, I don't think long-term holders need to worry all that much. And if it does come back, that will present another buying opportunity. So this is interesting. It's also very frightening. It keeps us all awake at night, perhaps a little more than it should. I find it stressful if I think that you people are being stressed by it. But this is also part of the territory in markets, and I'm looking forward to that silver lining in terms of some additional buying that I will be doing, both for my long-term investment portfolio, and also I will do that in terms of some leveraged positions. Crude oil, I mentioned in my review that it was back down under the $70 level. It is looking overextended to me. It's certainly becoming overextended on the charts. This has got quite a big move. But it has moved well below its rising 200-day moving average, and it has also taken out the last two reaction lows. And therefore, I think it'll certainly be a while before we see crude oil test that last high up in the $86 region or so, and it may require a weaker dollar, a considerably weaker dollar at some point to get it back up there. Now, that's not so great for oil producers, although the price is still reasonable enough for them. And it also takes the heat off in terms of some of that energy price inflation that consumers were feeling. And I better draw this audio to a close now, and just say, as I usually do, all the best to all of you.